Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca, and my co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky. We have almost a full week of live programming for you again. Thursday will be an archive repeat. We'll be live Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. Important guests, vital topics, the kind of information that you don't get in the mainstream, you certainly get it here. And today is a good example. My guest is Professor Emeritus John McMurtry. And John is a Professor Emeritus at the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada. He's a moral philosopher, an ethicist, a vocal activist for global justice, world peace, international law, all the things that seem to be lacking in this world today. His books include Unequal Freedoms, The Cancer Stage of Capitalism, and Value Wars. John, I've read two of the three. It's been a good while since I have. Value Wars and The Cancer Stage of Capitalism, that's how I discovered you. They were awfully impressive, along with the two articles that you sent to me ahead of this program. Welcome to the program, John.
My pleasure.
Oh, it's really great to have you on.
I just might add to the title of the Value Wars is that it's, which I really think we're coming to the cusp of 7 years later, is a global market versus the life economy. And I think that's really where the fulcrum of change and disaster has laid.
I think the moment of truth is out there, John. I just hope we can find solutions. You talk about them. In my late in life becoming a writer and radio host, I write about and talk about them as well. They're vital issues. They concern us all. Everything touches us one way or another. Wars in the Middle East touch us. Certainly the economy touches us. And the policies don't seem to be getting any better. Oh, my goodness. You sent me two articles. Let's talk about them and anything else that you wish, John. We have four commercials when you hear soft music coming on. It means a commercial, I'll interrupt, and then we'll pick it up again.
Right.
But you sent me two. You sent me a powerful address that you gave last October to University of Toronto students on the global economic collapse.
Well, it was that Science for Peace, actually, which is an international organization that was part recipient of the Nobel Prize some years ago.
Well, you gave it away?
Essentially scientists, high-level scientists from University in Toronto elsewhere, and that was at the Earth Studies Institute. So it wasn't just an activist talk. It was really trying to get the framework of understanding of what I call the global collapse, the causal mechanism and the solution or the alternative.
It was an awfully powerful piece of writing and an address, John. It was long. It was power-packed. It was just crammed with vital information.
It's available, incidentally. It's available on the web if you just put in my name, MCMURTRY, plus collapse, plus Science for Peace as one word, and Googled that, you'd get the full text.
Oh, wonderful.
They did ask for, the scientists asked for a comprehensive synthesis, and I did my best to provide that.
Oh, you indeed did, John. We hear that music going. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back and continue this. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. I'm on with John McMurtry. John, your other article is something I've written a great deal about, and I'll continue to do it. And it's up on Global Research. Michelle is traveling in Asia and keeping up as best he can. This one is called The Obama Crossroads, Neoliberal Coup or Responsible Government. I certainly don't see responsible government, John. It disturbs me greatly, and I think of his administration. A word I like to use is continuity. I don't see a lot of change. I also call him George Bush's third term.
Yes, well, it's It's distressing, and mind you, one expected the worst in a way. It was just a presidential brand change in order to sustain the empire in a state where the world had lost any faith in the republic. And his appointments, I think, are what really, really disturbed me. I mean, the appointments of Summers, for example, in particular. I mean, Summers, who has said such things as that, well, he's very famous for the memorandum that was leaked at the measurements of the costs of health-impairing pollution from increased morbidity and mortality, that he was all for much more trade in these items by putting them to Africa, where they don't have a price on pretty air, and this would be world welfare enhancing, and so on. He also has said that the market is the source of all values, whatever. So he is a neoliberal fanatic, market worship at its worst. And he is at the head of the economic advisory team of Obama. So that was really jarring. And then we could go on with Geithner and so on. That's when my alarm bells really began to ring, when those names came up. And I wrote that article actually just as those appointments were being made. As I say, it just was a long track telegraphing of what was to come. And, of course, what's happened with the $1.2 trillion, it's not just $700 billion that they've given out to just down this Wall Street money hole, when the whole system could have been restructured, as has happened before in American history on the financial level, restructured to actually serve the economy. But that hasn't happened. It appears that Wall Street has stayed fully in charge.
Oh, there's no question about that. The Obama administration, I would say, on the one hand, is Wall Street occupied territory, John. And on the other hand, it's Israeli occupied territory.
Yeah.
James Petras is a frequent guest on this program.
Yes.
And some weeks back, he wrote a marvelous article called "Our First Jewish Obama, Our First Jewish President." And the guy was literally discovered at Harvard Law School, and he's not stupid, he's a smart guy, which really makes him dangerous.
Yeah. Well, it seems that if you're to be appointed, and this works in Canada as well, you if you're going to be a front man, a brand for these interests, you have to know nothing whatever about economics. And that seems to be a price of admission. So Obama, I have a friend who actually presented him my book, Value Wars, and who knew Obama, or knew people that knew Obama, and he had a meeting with him not so long ago. And he said his eyes just glazed over when you talked about economics or the market having, the free market, so to speak, which is really just turning money into more money for private money possessors. He was really incapable of engaging the subject. So that, again, is what we've learned to expect.
I guess he and George Bush have that in common. You put these front men in charge of the government. I think of them as occupying that seat in the office that's oval-shaped. and it doesn't really matter who's there, John. They could put an electronic image there, and the people behind the scenes will run everything, the militarists and the Pentagon and the financial interests on Wall Street. And two subjects I've written a great deal on in recent weeks since late December.
But can I just the point of information, it doesn't matter. Well, it did matter with Jefferson, and it did matter with Lincoln, and it did matter with Roosevelt. It mattered a very great deal.
Oh, it sure did.
In each case, they steered the country right. I mean, just to quote Jefferson, where he says banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies.
Indeed.
He knew that, and Lincoln knew it before his assassination. which I think may have been because he warned against the corporations taking control of America. And he also stopped the banks from, well, he wouldn't take loans from the banks at 17% compound interest a year, which they wanted to charge the New York bankers for the defense of the Union, the Civil War. So, and then Roosevelt had a head of the Federal Reserve, Roosevelt, and he worked very well towards actually making the government represent the common life interest. So it does matter who's in there. What has happened is, I guess, this public relations control of everything, where things are sold like soap, and they flood the airlines, saturate, din into people's head a certain message over and over and over and over and over again, long, you know, say it often, say it simple, and then they just get the outcome that they've predicted. I mean, that seems to have been the change from these people, and of course it ultimately really depends on the people themselves, whether they are capable of just being conditioned creatures. And I guess in a way that we've, you know, as a populace, we have moved in that direction, just as Israel moves in that direction. Since you just mentioned Israel, I was just reading in The Economist where 92% of the Israeli population supported this eco-genocidal campaign that's continuing against the people in the occupied territories.
Oh, indeed so. The great majority of Israelis are for it, and it's incredible that people, the Israeli press is a bit more open than ours. You can go to Haaretz, John, and you can actually get some columnists who will put out good information.
There are some excellent people.
Oh, yeah. Gideon Levy, Amir Haas.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine those people in the New York Times. And said they have the likes of Thomas Friedman. And there's no possibility you can learn anything from the New York Times. They do slip up once in a while, John, and kernels of truth, or even an occasional article of truth will slip out. But, you know, the exception proves the rule. Generally, it's the same tired old propaganda line, and the New York Times leads it. But I agree with you. I think in recent years, or maybe recent decades, the person who occupies the Oval Office has been, in my estimation, no different than an electronic image. There are no Jeffersons around. There are no FDRs. And I think the system has changed. I don't think it's possible today to have a Jefferson or an FDR. Now, we could have an economic calamity that would change all the rules, change everything.
We do have an economic calamity.
Oh, we do indeed.
We awaken to the structure of it.
We're not addressing it properly. We're doing the same tired old things.
What's amazing, isn't it, in a scientific civilization where we suspend the relationship between cause and effect. And so you will not find anywhere, I mean, really, not only in the received press, but really any place of record where the causal mechanism is even investigated. And the causal mechanism is pretty straightforward. And they're just disconnect between the outcomes, the effects, which we have an economic catastrophe. It's interesting, you know, the cancer stage of capitalism, because it behaves like a cancer, this what I call the money sequence of value. That was 9 years ago that it was, or 10 years ago that it was published. And the very things at the time, it was alarming to even use the model, but it was first published in a public health journal, so it was refereed by medical people. And that it was really a cancer at the social level of life organization that was occurring, and the key to turning money into more money for money possessors, private money possessors, is the end and aim of all so-called economic activity, is it does behave just like a cancer. It has no committed function to the life host. It multiplies without inhibition. It occupies and takes over and doesn't perform any function and so forth. All the standard hallmark characteristics of a carcinogenic invasion are evident, only it's that just like the law of gravity applies at different levels of life organization, so does this breakdown of life organization. And not only do we not see it, we don't see it as the cause, even though it's being, at least in the body, the immune system recognizes the carcinogenic invasion, if it's going to survive, because we all have these carcinogenic sequences going on, but they don't succeed because we have an immune system that recognizes them. And on the social level of life organization, that job really goes to the public communication system, that is the media. But the media themselves, as you were saying, are occupied. I mean, they are just basically there to sell advertising messages as vehicles of commerce, to sell the commodities of the corporations that advertise them. And of course, they're not going to see any problem with this causal mechanism. They're not even going to identify it. So I guess the really amazing thing to me is that we do live in a scientific civilization, we appear to live in a scientific civilization, but we have disconnected cause from effect at the system level.
John, I agree with you 100%. I think the cancer analogy is about the best one I can think of.
Well, you know, I argue that it isn't an analogy. It's a diagnosis. But it's at the social level of life organization. Well, I had, as they say, medical referees on this. And,
John, we have to take another break.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, forgive me. Let's take a break and then we'll pick it right up.
Okay.
Welcome back. I'm on with John McMurtry. We're talking about the state of the world, the Obama administration, the cancer stage of capitalism. John, there's got to be something fundamentally wrong with a system that needs to devour or despoil the planet and devour all humanity to grow. And growth is the operative word for the system. I mean, it has to grow. You either grow, you can't stand still. You stand still, you die.
But
by your reasoning.
Yeah, but it isn't, you see, it really isn't a life system. That's a part of the reason for that diagnostic frame. The whole system, every single movement of it is to, as I've said before, is to turn money into more money for private money possessors. And there's many, many ways in which that's done, beginning with the creation of the money itself by debt, which, you know, banks create debt, and that's how they create money, and then they become dependent on that, and they leverage it and so forth. But the key is, between all the corporations and all the capitalist, money capitalist firms that are going, there's one thing in common, and even amongst individuals as they've been forced into this money sequence of value, everything is to turn money into more money for private money possessors. And that's all that grows. Even when we talk about growth and that the market grew last year, or we had so much growth in the economy, or they always think of the GDP as a measure of the welfare of the well-being of a society, all that's being measured here is the aggregate totality of money exchanges changing into more money. And it doesn't matter what the middle term of it is. The middle term of it can be a toxin, a weapon, or anything else, or nothing at all. It's just, you know, going through financial commodities and more. But what always happens, and this is the thing that seems to be missing from the understanding, you'll certainly not find it anywhere in the neoclassical models, is that all that really matters, the ultimately regulating principle, this is, you see, the value theory, comes to understand this, but it's amazing how it's blocked against. So what's all that's growing here is money demand in the possession of private firms and individuals. And so we don't have growth at all of anything except that. And that hasn't been decoded. And on the other hand, we have, you know, everybody worries, as I have been for years, thinking, well, what's the alternative? And I won't go into alternatives that appear to have failed, have failed, but rather go below what we're seeing to what I call the civil commons. And the civil commons sounds like, and this is an already existing economy that's always been there, it underlies the money market economy, it underlies the the global market, and it's always been there, and it is what actually ensures the reproduction and the development of the species. And what do I mean by the civil commons? It sounds utopian, but in fact it's in there. It's just being disconnected from it. It's like we have an institutionalized amnesia about what really our life ground is. And this is, I've even had to introduce that term of life ground as a what I call an ontoethical concept, to even get at what's there that everybody knows. They can't take a breath without it. They can't move one inch on a public pathway without it. They can't have a pension without it. Their children can't go to school without it. On and on we go. We can't speak without it. That's the origin of the civil commons. And what it is any social construct that enables universal access to life goods. And it's life goods here. That is a means of life, that which enables life to become more life, and that's the money sequence of value. Now, the civil commons is already there. The civil commons has already been developed, but it's being dismantled, privatized, liquidated everywhere it can for the money sequence, and that's why it's like a carcinogenic invasion that takes apart the very productive organs of the body. With no commitment to that host. So the civil commons is there. We have a government. I mean, it does have a civil commons function, and some of the functions of the U.S. government still have a civil commons function, like that we do have sidewalks, for example, or that we do have universal schooling, for example, or we do have Medicaid for seniors, for example. But the U.S. is the most undeveloped society in the world, and this is why it's crashing. And one has seen this come for a long time. It's only civil commons isn't the civil commons at all. It's only collective base is not only the money sequence, but to defend that money sequence and to advance it and imperialize it is the military. And that's where people in the United States come together. Even your national anthem is really a military song. And that's the only place where we have, in the U.S. in particular, and that's why it's suffering most, is because it really has no social infrastructure. And then as for the ecological life infrastructure, and both of these are what everybody, every individual, and every formation of life on the planet depends upon, there's just no awareness of it. It doesn't compute to the money sequence of value, what's called the market. It doesn't enter into any equation, and yet it's the basis of every possibility of the next moment of human life for everybody. So all the conditions required to take our next breath is a way of describing that life ground, and it's made up of both ecological and social infrastructures that are collective. And that has existed from the beginning, from the origins of language. It's developed much more in Europe than in the U.S., which is actually one of the worst places in the world for it. And that's why it's suffering so terribly. And until you reground in that, I'm afraid the disaster is coming. This is what we'd hoped with Obama, but what isn't happening?
John, we'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. I'm on with John McMurtry. John, that's a very powerful message. And in my language, I just like to sum it up and think of it all as the essentials to life, whether we're talking about clean air, clean water, education, availability of health care, affordable, and so on. And I'd like to add at least one more to that, our personal freedoms. A little over a year ago, I wrote a very long article I call Police State America. And I don't do rants. I just try to dig out facts and present them. And it was so clear that, my goodness, we literally have become a police state, from the Patriot Act to the Homeland Security Act, to on and on and on, one thing after another. The Bush administration actually legalized torture. I wrote an article, Torture as Official U.S. Policy, including against U.S. citizens. And I dug out all kinds of memoranda, executive orders. I was absolutely astonished And the language wasn't so foggy that it wasn't crystal clear that we basically were saying anybody we want to call a terrorist, this horrible word that we use, you know, anybody who doesn't agree with us is a terrorist, and we can do any damn thing we want to them. And my understanding now is that Obama, well, he came out with some kind of an anti-torture executive order that does not abandon torture. And he refuses to abandon the CIA extraordinary rendition policy. Well, my goodness, then they could come get me tonight, John, in the middle of this program. They could haul me off the air and call me a terrorist.
Yes, well, it's interesting, the word, just the terrorism, it's sort of extreme end of government spending on anything else but life needs, and I want to come back to that. But just on the word terrorist, I mean, the notion, the word terrorist, enters into the historical vocabulary of history with the French Revolution, and terrorism was by the state. And the state terrorism now seems to be a new way of using the word. In fact, as with so many other words like freedom, the original and basic meaning has just been, in an Orwellian way, reversed. That's with respect to terror. Now, the problem with, we agree that what people want and what people need is what the public interest should be seeking to secure, is really life security for our needs. But the problem is that this whole what I call a ruling group mind has also become amnesiac with respect to what the meaning of need is. What are the essentials? And there's absolutely no criterion or no coordinate, life coordinate, inside the whole of the dominant economics, so-called economics, but in terms of which we think. But what is a need? Well, a need is, it's pretty straightforward. A need is anything without which life capacity is reduced. And I think that's where we need to start, is just what a need is. And the government, it should be government in the common life interest. Once you just leave out the word life and leave out the concept of it's actually life that's involved here, then anything at all, including torture, can be called what we require, what's necessary, etc. So the common life interest is to ensure, as any economy should ensure, the production and distribution of goods, life goods, otherwise in short supply, and these life goods are what meet needs, and needs are that without which life capacity is reduced. Now, if we applied that criterion to government, you would find that some of the things the government does do meet needs, like universal education and public pathways and regulations against the pollution of the air, the insurance of clean water supplies, and on you can go. It's, in fact, it's the whole economy that's just, as I say, been forgotten. Once we apply that standard to government, we can see what's needed. And this, there's never been a more perfect, whether government's actually in the common life interest or not. And there's never been a more perfect opportunity. I have a brother who's a surgeon, and when this crash happened, he called me in some delight saying, thank God we've finally broken through and seen this insane system does not work. And we haven't experienced that before in our lifetime. At the same time, we have an absolute imperative of the, you know, our ecosystem from climate destabilization on, in order to do what is required to steward the very most basic means of life, our life support systems, our ecological services, and so forth. And at the same time to do that, you have to change, you have to reset your manufacture towards a life-coherent production. And that requires lots and lots of jobs. So all of these things, it's almost like a marriage made in heaven. All of these things that are coming in together as a conjuncture where only one answer is possible as a solution. And what really what is so despairing is that at the level of government, these connections are completely blocked out. There's a kind of a metaphysical stupefaction. So that at the very point when everything comes together of what is needed, what is essential for the reproduction of our lives as citizens and as a nation and as a society, it's coming together, and it is the banks have had a corrupt collapse. Money power returns from the private party that's manipulated us and driven us into the sewer. It returns to government where it controls the constitutional control over currency and credit. I mean, you know, the government can't do it except, well, they've been collecting taxes. They know how to fight. I mean, money, they're the only ones who can do it. And it's also existed. And every time a great crisis, that's what happens, is it reverts to the public sector who know how to do the job. At the same time, investment is put in what serves human needs. And, of course, what serves human needs above all in these days is what sustains our entire ecological infrastructure, as well as our social life support systems like education, culture, pensions, unemployment insurance, and so forth, basically life security systems, which should also, you know, they are life goods, and they should go towards the production of the real life goods, which is what we call, what we require, such as pollution abatement systems, cars that don't emit fossil fuels when fossil fuels are low. In fact, we need rations, but that's another unspeakable inside this ruling group mind framework. So in short, I think it's very, very clear what needs to be done, and it's very clear what a need is, and all that's really required is the joining of the dots. All of the, it's constitutionally possible, as I argue in Value Wars, it's constitutionally possible to do all these things. Really what is required is a mind, but we really have a mind lock now that is probably the greatest case of, as I say, metaphysical stupefaction in the history of the race.
I think I have a few more adjectives I would use to describe it, John, like greed is a common one I use. These people who enrich themselves at our expense, at the planet's expense, the more they get, the more they want to get.
You know, that it puts it on the personal level of a personal, they're bad people. And I don't
want I'm thinking of the system, John.
I don't want to disagree with that, but I'm going to go back to the system. The system or the game, if you like. The game is they think they're smart. Everybody rewards them. They get great success. It's like a game where everybody uses baseball bats to pound each other's brains out, and then they, you know, the ones who do it best are rewarded and glorified. I mean, these people are still glorified. They're still running the government. And they think they all think they're very smart and ahead of the game, and indeed they are this game. And so prior to their personal greed, they were born into the system.
I'm thinking of systemic greed, John.
Hmm?
I'm not naming names. Systemic greed is what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
And one more thing added to it. These people know from past experience, and it's being borne out now, that if God forbid they screw up, as they have, the government will bail them out.
Unbelievable.
Well, just imagine they're bailing us out if we get in trouble. I was part of a small family business. We got in trouble several times, went right to the edge of the abyss. We never got a dime from the government. If we went under, nobody would have given a damn. But these people, first they committed massive fraud, and they're being rewarded for it. So we're in the process of looting the treasury, making taxpayers pay these criminals.
Yeah.
Hundreds of billions of dollars.
And pay the system, you see, the system that they were born into and that they've changed even more into simply to crank out money for private money possessors as the objective of everything and siphon absolutely everything out into it. That's what really is disturbing, is that it's just going to renew the system that is corruptly collapsed. They don't know how to manage the shop. They're incompetent. It's been proven. There's no need to ideologize one way or the other. The proof is now they don't know what they're doing. And
I think the
money going into the system. It's not these corrupt individuals who could die tomorrow and the problem would still be with us. And that's where we really have to go to. And government's supposed to be in the common life interest. And that's really ultimately, I think, the big change is that people reclaim their government. And this is an ersatz version with Obama. But I suppose, I think Obama's a more, the one thing that has advanced is that Obama is, has more brains than Bush, and he's capable, he is responsive and sensitive to mass public opinion. That's what got him where he is. And the mass public opinion simply has to turn against what they're doing and say, no, you the government is in the common life interest. You're not, none of what you're doing is for that at all. It's just to keep a defunct system going that is, they don't know how to manage the shop and they're corrupt and they've destroyed the economy. They've destroyed the economy over many years. So the people like Summers and so forth who are now running the economic policy, it just becomes publicly unacceptable, like other things have, that he continues. No, this isn't what you promised. This isn't what it is. So we really need a mass reclaiming of government that started to be the case, what people have thought to be the case, has to continue because he's being hemmed into a corner of just following the program, and he shouldn't be allowed to do that.
John, our backgrounds are much different. Yours from academia, mine from small business most of my working life, and I'm a Wharton grad, class of 1960, MBA, and I believe that I was
the same year as me.
my 50th year will be next February. February was my graduation date, 1960, when Eisenhower was still president. I was weaned in the system. I believed in it. And over time, I began to see things that just didn't compute for me. And, I mean, this thing isn't working the way they taught me. And very slowly, I changed through the years. And now, I think of capitalism, the kind of writ large capitalism we have. The only word I want to use to describe it is predatory. I mean, it's just sucking the life out of everything to make more money.
It isn't really capital, you know. That also is an Orwellian term, and we think capital is the problem. What all that it stands for is money capital, turning money into more money.
Oh, indeed.
And what capital comes? It has a common origin, etymological origin with cattle, which was the sort of universal wealth of agrarian society and also herd societies. And we know very well about cattle being basically a currency of exchange as well as a form of wealth. And cattle capital, that's really where it came from. It's just, so capital really means wealth that is used to produce more wealth. And what the only wealth that is worth anything is wealth for life. Life wealth, and so we should be using the term life capital. And life capital would be, you know, whatever it's used, life capital is used to produce more life and more life capital. And the best example of that would be our public knowledge system, which is the ultimate form of capital, really, and it could be life capital, knowledge capital. And we need to really reclaim the concept of capital itself.
Oh, indeed, John. It doesn't matter whether companies make hamburgers, Hondas, whatever.
Yeah.
They're in the business of making money.
Yeah.
And whether they have a factory or they have a back office or whatever they're doing, the idea is to make money and to make more money. And, of course, we're talking about public corporations in nearly all cases. So they need to grow the equity for their shareholders.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, the self-destructiveness is, the system is so fundamentally broken, John. I don't know how it can possibly survive over time. It's gone on for many, many decades.
But it's going to take the whole planetary life system down with it.
That's the problem. And you throw militarism into the mix, and if we don't blow ourselves up, we'll suck the clean air out of the system.
And that's the greatest money sequence of all, until the financial pyramid scheme started, where it has no base in anything. The military was always the best because you could turn money into more money for private money possessors. It's all these weapons are raised, you know, made by, as you know, productive and private, profit capitalist firms. And you have instant obsolescence. You have a huge unit per unit cost beyond anything else, any other commodity. And as I say, it's instantly obsolescent. It wears out. It's gone as soon as it's used. And you have the pockets of the public, the future life of the whole society, that you can siphon out of indefinitely. So it was the money capitalist enterprise, the supreme one. Of all, for all those reasons. And then once you got into financial capital, it became even more preferable for this money sequencing group mind. And you didn't have to have anything in between money and more money, not even a weapon. And what we really have to do is go back, you know, find our ground again, find the life ground again, and say, well, you know, with everything that we do in society, you can't make dogs fight, for example, as Michael Vick did. That, you know, people may be willing to pay for it, but that isn't what we're gonna allow here. No, and you can't have contaminated food, although basically our food has been, food supply has been contaminated, has been toxified. No, you can't do that any more than you can put toxins in the water. And that we have life standards, and that's what government should be. That's what government should be instituted for, and in some respects is nothing government does, nothing it taxes for that doesn't have life standards and doesn't comply with life standards is allowed. Sorry, you can't light fires in your neighbor's house. You can't do these things that are going to destroy life and depredate life.
But it's just
so
the opposite, John.
We need life standards. Yeah.
We have another break. Instead of being government all by and for the people, the Ralph Nader line, you know, off General Motors, for DuPont, by IBM. What kind of a system is this? One more break, John. We'll come back, and the hour flies by. We'll finish it up with some more thoughts that you have. We'll
okay.
be right back. For our final few minutes, John, if I can mention very briefly, I have so many core issues. I am absolutely committed to the oppressed people of the world, the Palestinians. In this country, a core issue for me is political prisoners. I communicate regularly with one at Terre Haute Prison, federal prison in Indiana, and I just got an email from a new man. I've written about a number of them. This man's name is Syed Mousavi, a blessed Muslim man. Convicted because of his charity, his outreach, 15-year sentence, all trumped-up charges. But they let him send emails occasionally, and he just sent me a very lovely email. When I get off here, I'll answer him right away. And it's wonderful that I can do something to spread the word about these people and let whoever reads me know that this is what my country is doing to innocent people, along with everything else, John.
Yeah, well, this is part of the whole disease. You know, that whatever calls out, like your friend, whatever calls out the nature of the problem of life despoiling practices that are turning money into more money, and somebody wants to stop it and stands up against it, then that person has put their life in jeopardy, and it works all the way down, right into the academy. Even in Canada, if you call into question, and this has always been the case with the species at a lower level of development, if you call into question the ruling value system in any way, then there are attacks and invalidations and so forth, because people preconsciously identify with the ruling order, so that even Plato and Socrates, you know, and Aristotle all supported slavery. And we have a form of slavery, in fact, much more damaging now. And anybody who calls out against it, or especially lays it bare, like your friend, is going to be subject to the arbitrary use of the law. And I'm glad you're there to fight for him, because otherwise he'll disappear. And this is the major, you know, the blinker out. The condition. conditioning not to see is really the central conditioning, the central operation that goes on to keep people not knowing what's going on.
John, I can't let these people or these issues die. I decided this is the way I want to spend my retirement. I'm getting close to 75. I could be out fishing or whatever retired people do. I just kind of imagine doing stuff like that. This is what I want to do. I want to speak out. I want to write. I want to do things on radio. I get asked to be interviewed on other programs, and it's become an obsession for me. I just have to do this.
Well,
what better way?
Yeah, I think this is actually, I really think people are built this way. I think that to do something of value, life value for others, that's of interest to yourself is really the human vocation. And this is almost the worst repression of all that's gone on, is that that has been basically shut down as far as it is required to be shut down, which it does if it's all you're working for is turning money into more money for private money possessors. Then the human vocation itself goes under. But you and I are lucky that I'm finding it the best period of my life for this reason, is that you have the freedom to fulfill the human vocation, which you really didn't have all the way through until now. That's part of the civil commons.
They won't shut us down, John. They may haul us away, but they won't shut us down. And,
no.
After 75 years, what a way to go. What a way to go. John.
Well, our larger identity is the
Well, I've got to cut you off. That music means they're going to cut us off.
Right.
Oh, we are out of time. The hour always goes by too fast. I do hope you'll come back and we can do it again.
Good.
Thank you, John, so much.
It's been a pleasure to see you.
And come back and join us again tomorrow. Another vital discussion.
Okay. Bye for now.